I have to be a warrior, a slave I could not be. All right, folks. Well, the good news coming from our racial perspective is that here in America, I don't know if you've heard about it, Pastor Martins, but white people have been ganging up on Antifa and beating the crap out of them, right? In Portland, Oregon, white people are sick and tired of taking this Jewish nonsense, communist nonsense, and I think Antifa got a message that if you want a race war with Whitey, you're going to get one, okay? But I understand that oh, by the way, AT&T just announced that Kate Middleton attended Wimbledon in a polka dot dress. Isn't that stunning news? Okay. But I understand you have incredible news for us, and it has to do with AfriForum. Maybe you could give our people a little bit of background on who AfriForum is, because we did a couple of shows about this, but it was quite a while ago since we've had an actual, you know, a co-hosted show. Over to you.
Yes. Yes. Good evening, Pastor, and good evening to all the listeners across the globe to Eurofolk Radio, and in particular to Christian Identity. Thank you very much, Pastor, again for having me on the show. It's been now 2 weeks, I think 3 weeks since our previous show that we've had because of technical problems, and to which I most probably would be able to ascribe to perhaps the tinkering of unwanted parties.
Hacking,
Because I've had hacking, etc. Now, I have been the victim of something similar, and I've opened a prosecution case with the South African police, and this person is wanted. I have a warrant for the arrest of this person, and definitely there's going to be some action on that. But that is not the important news that I wanted to share. Yes, Pastor, I think the time has come for people to realize that you cannot just say anything on Facebook. It is, whatever you say, you will be held accountable for. And what we've had in the past is with the Cape Dutch Afrikaners. Now, I have no fear of contradiction of what I'm saying. What I'm saying and what I'm stating is I can prove in terms of black and white. And then I don't mean in terms of racial black and white, but I can prove it on documents. And these documents are both available, or some of it is available on the internet for the public to see. Some of this information is only available. Now, I want you to hear this close. Some of this information is only available in research libraries. In other words, you've got to be registered with a library of some kind or the other in order to have access to this information. So one can say that this information is blocked for public viewing because of the sensitivity and the secrecy thereof, purely because of the previous government's full control, the apartheid government, the Cape Dutch Afrikaner National Party government of South Africa, having total and full control of everything that was distributed. And those that information that they did not want distributed, of course, what was what gave them their power of brainwashing three generations of the Boer people in terms of what their history is, what their roots are, and where they what their heritages are. So there we have it. I have broken through this information barrier, and I have, like I mentioned to you on numerous occasions, the visitation of the angel in 2014, Pastor, the angel gave me certain keywords that I had to go and look for. And these keywords have been such an important key in terms of discovering the truth of the history of the Boers and where the Cape Dutch descended from. In any case, in terms of this, AfriForum is an organization that presents themselves, or they purport to be, a so-called community, can we say a community watchdog?
Okay.
They purport to be in particular in support of the victimized, what they say, the victimized Afrikaner, or the white section of the population of South Africa, whom have been marginalized and disenfranchised. And to a large degree, well, you know and I know that the whites are continuously, for over the past two decades now and more, the whites, and longer, if I can also state that the marginalization was already happening during the rule of the previous governments, the white government, because they were marginalizing the Boers. Boers were not moved and promoted into managerial positions, unless that managerial position. Now, I did not realize this at the time, but there were five occasions where I was in line for promotion and where I was asked, what church do I attend, or what assembly of the church do I attend? And when I stated that I was not a member of the Afrikaner churches, on two occasions, the manager said to me, oh, that's a pity. And I asked him, what do you mean it's a pity? And he sort of talked it away.
Mm-hmm.
But what I have discovered is, on every application during that time, during the previous government's reign, I could say, whenever you applied for a position, you had to have a letter of testimony from the local, your local Dominee's office.
Well, Dominee being a Judeo-Christian, probably also a Freemason.
Correct, Pastor, and that is the whole thing. If you were not a member of one of the three Afrikaner churches, you were not promoted. You were removed from the promotion possibilities to senior managerial and even further into the business directorship, etc. Now, I did not know this at the time. I did find it strange on those five occasions that I was in particular asked about it, and where I had heard about the fact that I had not been promoted in spite of the fact that I was in line for promotion, but I was never told why I was not promoted. But now that I have this information available, I realized, or I discovered, that this was instituted by the Jan Smuts government of 1910, after the Union of South Africa, or rather, shall I say, the illegal Union of South Africa, so that they could discern who were Boers and who were Afrikaners, because the Afrikaners were, the Afrikaners were donated the farms which the Boers were, the Boers were disowned from their farms after the 1910 government, and these farms were donated to the Cape Dutch in the Boer Republic, so that the Boer Republics were invaded, if you can say that, by these Cape Dutch Afrikaners,
or confiscated,
for the purpose.
Confiscated.
Pastor, the Union government under Jan Smuts and Louis Botha already disowned these farms, or the farmers, the farms from the farmers or the Boers, and these farms were then donated to those Cape Dutch Afrikaners that participated on the British side of the Anglo-Boer War. And the reason for that was, when they instituted their unionist government, they started holding elections. Now, in the Boer Republics, there were never elections. They were holding referendums. Now, a referendum is a total different matter from an election.
Mm-hmm.
An election, of course, has a third party, a political party that can be sold. In other words, a political party gathers the votes, and the political party is the party that, or the entity that goes and makes promises to the people, and the election candidates go out and make promises to the people, and then after the elections are over, the number of people that voted for a political party becomes a bargaining chip for that political party now to sell their support in terms of which corporation is going to finance us, which corporation are we going to propagate, or their interests are we going to propagate in parliament or wherever it might be. Now, a Republican principle is totally on a one-to-one basis, where the public has direct control as to whom is in parliament, not an indirect appointed by a political party. You see, the important thing is this. I'm distracting myself here, Pastor. Mm-hmm. But the important thing is this. By having a political party and a candidate, the candidate is not directly responsible to the electorate anymore. Once he has been elected, he can now actually walk the floor or cross the floor and join the opposite party.
Wow.
That happened in South Africa. That is how the Democratic Alliance became the opposition party in South Africa, by the fact that people would go into the popular party of a particular election ward. And then when the people elected that particular person, the next time they are in parliament, he crosses the floor and he takes his electorate with him to the opposing party. So many people have voted for one party only to find that the person that they voted for crossed the floor and joined the opposition party, the ruling party. And this happened for a period of time, a number of years in South Africa. So to come back to the matter of AfriForum.
Okay.
What we found is on numerous occasions, I have been confronted with AfriForum making promises. Now, AfriForum is, a community organization, a community support organization, who purport to be on the side of the whites who have been marginalized. And they purport to be helping those people that have been marginalized because of race, religion, and in particular on the basis of the fact that they are white, and that the government of the day have elected, and they have ventured out on a path whereby only blacks get appointed in government positions, and they have also set laws that virtually make it impossible for a white man to be employed by a company,
mm-hmm.
especially corporations and large parastatals and corporations. So the whole thing is this: AfriForum purporting to be on the side of the whites. What we have found, and I just found this about 20 minutes before the show.
Okay, now wait a minute. Let me summarize here, because for people who have not heard this, our AfriForum is purporting to represent both the Boer people and white Afrikaners, which would include those of British and Dutch descent. And has actually stabbed the Afrikaners and the Boer people in the back because they were going to prosecute,
Julius Malema.
Malema. Prosecute Malema, yes, for hate speech. And then when the judge was going to rule against Malema, AfriForum stepped in and said, we really don't want this. We're dropping our case. So, and snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. Back to you.
Yes, absolutely, Pastor. What they did was, beforehand, a number of us were in the process of gathering support to actually take on Julius Malema with the Human Rights Commission. And I think that AfriForum got wind of this, and they realized that they could use this as in terms of obtaining some form of power. But I don't want to run ahead of the story. I want to give it.
They got wind of this, and in other words, they smelled the flatulence being blown out by the bowels of the Illuminati. Go ahead. Go ahead.
And what they did was, they have a facility whereby they send out messages by email and by every possible means that they can. And if you respond with a certain word on a text message given, to a particular number, that text message generates an amount of money for them. It's one of these WASP, we call it in South Africa, it's a WASP service.
Okay.
It is a wireless added service or something like that.
Right.
And an amount of, let's say, for example, R5 is added to your, if you add that word to that particular number and you send it as a text message, it gives AfriForum R5 in the pocket.
Okay.
Some money goes to the network carrier, and
some to the Jews, some to the Freemasons,
or your account.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I get it. Understood.
What they did was, now they part and parcel of solidarity. It's one of these workers union or trade union.
Okay.
Which was in particular for the mine workers union, which consisted primarily of, at the time, I'm talking back about 15, 20 years ago or more even, when the mine workers union consisted of and represented the, in particular, the whites, and in particular to that, the Boers who still had work. Remember that the Boers were relegated to stone cobblers and road builders and mine workers, or the hard labor was relegated to the whites or the Boers after the Anglo-Boer War. So the mine workers union had quite a number of, I think it might even be in the order of about 40, 50,000 workers at the time. And of course, with the laws that have been instigated and instated by the present government, so many of these mine workers have lost their jobs in favor of blacks doing their jobs now. But for many years, this workers' union had been gathering and had survived and had flourished, in fact, on the monthly contributions of white miners and white union members of this union. Now, they have focused themselves, for example, in so-called the upliftment of the whites that have been relegated to the margins or the outer verges of society because of these draconical employment laws that have been instituted by the previous government at the end of their time, prior to their handover to the Freemason or the Black Freemason government of the ANC. Now, AfriForum is a organization that is that was actually formed outside or from within Solidarity, and it is a separate but very much part and parcel of the Solidarity group of organizations. Now, AfriForum, when it came to this particular case on Nelson Mandela, when they asked the members of that organization, contributing members, to pay additional amount of money into their account, and they pleaded with the people because they wanted to go, and what they said at the time was equivalent to they wanted to go and teach Julius Malema a lesson. They wanted to put him to terms. They wanted to bring him to terms in terms of his unabated singing of the song Kill a Farmer, Kill the Boer. Now, what AfriForum did, they made a team with the Transvaal Agricultural Union. Now, you must remember, the Transvaal Agricultural Union represents farmers and the interests of farmers. So they went and they accumulated unto themselves the Transvaal Agricultural Union in support of their so-called their case against Julius Malema, because Julius Malema sings Kill a Farmer, Kill a Boer.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the connotation there. So what they did was, when it was clear that the court was going to rule in their favor, now in their run up to this, they accumulated hundreds of thousands of rands. It might even be beyond a million rands.
Wow.
Which is...
Well, we're talking about real money now.
We're talking real money.
Yeah, right.
But that was on the basis that they would take Julius Malema to terms, or get him to come on terms and to be reprimanded, or even perhaps be jailed for the fact that he was singing a song that had been previously already identified and proclaimed to be a hate speech song.
Yes,
now,
absolutely.
When it was clear, and the Human Rights Commission actually concluded that it was not to be sung, it was hate speech against the Boers and the whites, and in spite of that, Jacob Zuma, being the president at the time, he was singing the song, and Julius Malema was singing the song.
Yeah.
And to this extent, when it was clear that the judge was going to rule in their favor, they asked for a time out, if I can call it that. They asked for a recess so that they can now consult with the defendant, whom is Julius Malema and the ANC. And when they did that, they came back and they asked the judge, what they put before the judge was an agreement whereby the parties agreed or came to
understanding
mm-hmm. that this song is a sensitive song to the white people and they don't like it to be sung. And that the ANC and the AfriForum TLU, or the Africa Agricultural Unit, Transvaal Agricultural Unit,
right.
that they came to the agreement that they will respect one another's feelings
mm-hmm.
when it comes to singing to singing songs.
Well, that's an automatically anti-white racist song. There's no doubt about it.
I can
see white people's feelings being hurt.
But the fact that AfriForum backed down, now we could
not suspicious.
Understand.
Very suspicious. Yeah, right. I mean, we've covered this several times. It is a stab in the back to the whites of South Africa, an absolute stab in the back. Why? Why did this happen?
Okay, Pastor. What I discovered, remember what I have also mentioned on a number of occasions, is that there was a conspiracy way back, even before the discovery of gold and diamonds. There was already amongst the Cape Dutch Afrikaners, there was a conspiracy to annihilate the Boers, to eradicate them, to rid the planet of Boers. Mm-hmm. Now, that conspiracy I have discovered many, many, many written proof of the fact that there was a conspiracy.
Right.
It was instigated. The Anglo-Boer Wars, both Anglo-Boer Wars, were instigated and enticed by the Cape Dutch Afrikaners. And they even used the Jameson invasion. Remember, we spoke about the Jameson invasion.
Yeah, instigated when again to blame the Boers, right? A false flag attack.
But the purpose of that particular event was to make the Boer republics believe that it was the British that was invading. In fact, that came to to invade the Boer Republic of Transvaal, and
interesting,
which would have had the Boer Republic of Transvaal to then declare war, because even if you are being attacked, if you don't declare war, you don't really have a right to defend yourself if you don't declare war.
Right.
And that is what they did. That is what the Cape Dutch Afrikaners want. They wanted the Boers to believe that it was Britain invading the Boer Republic.
Right. Okay,
they
wanted the Boer Republic to declare war.
But yeah, it didn't happen that way.
No.
The Jameson invasion was, in fact, leaked. And the Boers were waiting for the invaders.
Ah.
And Cecil John Rhodes was reprimanded. He was called back to London.
Yeah.
He was very harshly rapped over the fingers for his bringing about this particular event.
Right.
He was given a stern warning.
Yes.
But
okay,
then the Boers,
hold on.
Before you continue. The Cape Dutch weren't happy about that.
Oh, I can see.
So what
I can
they did was...
Hey, hold on one second, because... Bavaria Man thinks history is going to repeat itself. He's saying,
yes,
in the chat room that Russia is planning or is going to attack Germany according to such and such a prophecy. However, I don't see that happening unless Russia is instigated into attacking Germany. Okay, I can see
enticed.
If Angela Merkel is put out of power, the Rothschilds, I could see staging a false flag or a stooge attack, blaming Germany, you know, against Russia, blaming Germany,
yes,
thus starting another war between white nations. They're trying it again. Back to you.
That has been the case ever since the, I would say, even the Napoleonic Wars.
Right. Okay. So what have you found out about all of this intrigue regarding the AfriForum affair? What's going on here?
Pastor, now AfriForum, I have stated it on many occasions. I've even challenged members and the top executive of AfriForum. I have challenged and I asked them to explain themselves. They had basically, to a large degree, ignored me. I have made statements. I've made statements that have been very, I would even say, go to the extent of being harsh statements against the executive members of AfriForum.
Yes. And I have insinuated that they are probably Freemasons. I don't know whether that's provable.
I have no doubt in my mind that they are very closely associated with freedom or Freemasonry,
yeah,
and I'll tell you why I say and or the Afrikaner Broederbond. Now, the Afrikaner Broederbond is named many, many times in so many of the books that I've read about the time of the Anglo-Boer War, prior to the Anglo-Boer War and during the Anglo-Boer War. The name of the Afrikaner Broederbond, or the Afrikaner Bond at the time, because they have changed their names on a number of occasions, some of the sources that actually reference them in terms of history states that they were formed in 1918, but already in 1864, I have found proof thereof that already in 1864 there was an Afrikaner Bond consisting of Cape Dutch Afrikaners whom had very close links with Freemasonry. In fact, they had multiple roles.
For example, this has happened many times in the past. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it seems as if, excuse me, it seems as if this multiple role thing that they play is working, or they attempted to purport to be involved with one organization while they actually steamrolling events with the other organization. It seems ludicrous that they would be involved in two secret organizations at the same time, where each secret organization actually demands an exclusion of the other secret organization. So you can see that this is a contradiction in terms, because you cannot be a organized or associated with a Freemasonry if you're also a member of a different secret organization.
Sure.
However, mm-hmm. these individuals were members of two separate mutually excluding
supposedly, organizations. Yeah, supposedly mutually exclusive. They have dozens.
But,
yeah.
but,
they have blue lodges, which are composed of black people.
But,
right?
But I have reason to believe that this has been part and parcel of the camouflage that they have used over three generations to keep themselves out of the limelight.
No doubt.
Now, something else I wanted to say, Pastor.
Okay.
So many times I have actually stated, and I started talking about this, where I have made statements on Facebook in public, and I mark so many of my statements that I make, I mark as public so that even Google can search and find my statements.
Mm-hmm.
So then I then tag the chief executive people or the executive people of AfriForum and Solidarity. I tag onto the statement that I make, and I challenge them to give their side of the story if it differs.
Yes.
And only to find that, and I've done this also with Peter Mulder of the Freedom Front Plus,
okay,
a political party purporting to be
right.
in support of the Afrikaners and stealing, I've mentioned it on numerous occasions, and stealing the Boers' history for their own
yes.
distorted means.
Yes.
And political, yeah. for political gain. Pastor, and this
and
is
collecting
such an
donations
atrocity.
For themselves that would go to the Boer people instead, right?
Yes.
Back to you. Yeah.
Pastor, can you believe this? That the statements that they make is that the Afrikaners took on the Great Trek.
Ah, right.
The Afrikaners.
Oh, no, the Indians were the pioneers. Didn't you know that?
Possibly. Exactly. Now, the Afrikaners took on the Great Trek, and that the Afrikaners established the Boer Republics. What sense does that make?
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah, it's a lie. It's an absolute lie.
It's an absolute lie. But, Pastor, I've discovered something else as well. This is exactly the basis that the United Nations have the particular document. I just want to get the right word for that because I've got so many things passing through my mind at the moment.
Right.
They have a manifesto
right.
which defines a cultural genocide. Now, remember that the whole purpose of the Anglo-Boer Wars was to eradicate and eliminate the Boers of the planet. Now, mm-hmm. the Afrikaners, the Cape Dutch Afrikaners, have been executing the agendas associated with that
mm-hmm.
for the past three generations. These were the people that were sent to the border for in wars. These were the people, the Boers were the ones that were sent to the World War I and World War II. These were the people that were sent to the to Korea. These were the people. South Africa had a representation in mm-hmm. the Korean Wars as well. I don't know if you realize that, but it were the Boers that were sent to the wars.
Wow.
Because the Cape Dutch Afrikaners' children were sent to university to go and obtain degrees so that
right.
they can
wow.
fit into father's footsteps in the Freemasonry
yeah.
and the Afrikaner Bond organizations
yes.
such as Sanlam and Sanlam.
It's interesting.
And
there's a parallel here. Because the British in America were the slave owners in the South, but the Irish, to escape the potato famine, were conscripted into the Civil War for the North. Okay, so here
yes.
we have the elite Brits, you know, becoming slave owners and driving America into Civil War, but the Irish had to be foot soldiers. Okay, very similar situation.
Yeah.
Please continue.
Very similar.
Yes.
Pastor, to this. What I wanted to say is that what we have found, and this I only, somebody sent me a link and said to me, Dave, go and read through this. And when I opened it up, I came across a document that actually states who is running South Africa, who is in control of the government, who is funding the government, because South Africa has run out of money for a decent government or for any form of government long time ago
corrupt
already.
State. And totally the, corrupt.
And
yeah.
The people who fund these organizations that orchestrate the, from the background, orchestrate the running of South Africa's government. And one of these contributors, for example, is Soros, the George Soros Foundation.
George Soros, really? He's involved in South Africa, too. Open society. His open society, which means race mixing. The Society of Race Mixers. That's what that is. Yeah.
And the Ford Foundation and the Atlantic. There's an Atlantic Foundation as well for the advancement of... it's apparently a foundation that was formed by Ronald Reagan for certain purposes. But after Ronald Reagan... Of course, the subsequent presidents of America had different devious means whereby they could then apply these funds for. And these funds are also amongst which also cater for the financial support and the financial availability of finances for the present African government to continue in its course. Now,
are you saying, because he brought up the name of George Soros, are you saying that he is somehow involved with AfriForum and their stab in the back of white farmers?
Pastor, it's exactly what I'm saying.
Oh, wow. George Soros, that white-hating Jew. Christian-hating Jew. Amazing. Okay. That's plausible.
However,
I can see that. Go ahead.
Now, AfriForum have, on so many of the occasions where I have associated them with the Freemasonry, even with the their takeover. Now, I was a member of we have in South Africa a Article 23 company. Article 23 company is a company that operates on the basis of contributions from the public, but it does not have, its aim is not to have a profit. It's a non-profit organization. Now, we had a radio station called Radio Pretoria. Now, that is a radio station that was established outside of Pretoria, on the east of Pretoria, going out towards where we went for the Day of the Vow event in Middelburg. You can remember where we had that little cannon that was shot every afternoon. Also where Sunette Bridges was singing in the big tent, if you can recall.
I actually fired that cannon. That was a great experience. Okay. Yeah.
Now on the road between Pretoria and Middelburg, or on the Witbank, which has also had a horrible name change.
Really? It's no longer Witbank?
No, Pastor. It's become Matlehlele or something like that. It's virtually unpronounceable
Zulu Hulu name. Okay.
But on the road to Witbank, there's an area where there was a first Anglo-Boer War battlefield. And that battlefield was named Donkerhoek. And there's a Afrikaner community that actually purport to be Boers, but it's an Afrikaner community. It's run by Freemasons. And in that area, there was a radio station established, and it was known as Radio Pretoria.
Okay.
And Radio Pretoria had for many years, since the early 90s, I can recall in 1991, 1992, I would travel from Germiston every evening to go and... go onto the grounds of Radio Pretoria's mast. The radio mast itself was, there was fears that the then government, which was the Afrikaner government, wanted to close it down, and there was talk and the possibility of the military going overnight and blowing up the mast. So we were a number of civilians that actually went, and we slept in these what do you call them? Loopgrave. They called loopgrave in Afrikaans.
Mm-hmm. What do they do?
Trenches. We actually dug trenches.
Okay.
Night after night. That's right. Night after night, we would actually guard and sleep in these trenches, winter and summer, protecting the tower of Radio Pretoria against the white government. Can you believe it? But it was the only radio station that was a mouthpiece for the Boers.
Right.
Now, that had regressed. That the whole radio station had very under the it was a Dutch Reformed Dominie that became the chairman of the organization that ran this, and he was a Freemason. And it was
Freemasons. Amazing. Absolutely. Yeah.
And what we found is the possibility, if you're dealing with a Dutch Reformed minister, the possibility that you're dealing with a Freemason is perhaps in the order of 85%. But there was a definite regression in this radio station's culture and in its image or its personality in terms of becoming more and more liberal or liberally orientated. And AfriForum started very heavily investing into this radio station in terms of time. They were actually buying advert time or advertising time. And the more advertising time that they purchased, the more the radio station became dependent on AfriForum. In the end, AfriForum demanded that they wanted also a sitting in the control and the management of this radio station. And not long after that, it was finally hijacked by the AfriForum Freemason clan, if I can call it that.
Mm-hmm.
I received in person, I received a message and a copy of an Australian newspaper. It was not a national newspaper. It was a very it was from the from the Albany or Queensland at the time, a Freemason newspaper that where they made the announcement that after many years of battling to get a hold and control of Radio Pretoria in South Africa, the Freemasons have finally managed to take full control of Radio Pretoria. And that was when AfriForum took control of it. And I have been involved in the exposing of AfriForum solidarity
and open society and Soros's open society,
but in particular exposing AfriForum and solidarity as being communistic organizations,
right,
controlled by the Freemasons. Their logos actually indicated this, the way in which they dealt with things and the way in which they portrayed themselves from time to time. They would actually venture into the liberal talk, etc. For example, they started having interviews with the ex-South African Minister Pip Botha, who was very clearly is a self-confessed Freemason. And there's reason to believe I have also received information from somebody quite some time ago where Pip Botha was identified as being a member of the satanic movement in the Cape.
Right. this is interesting.
He was
Go ahead.
In his time in Parliament, he actually used parliamentary privileges,
right,
and also parliamentary communication mechanisms like postage stamps and postage envelopes that was marked Parliament to actually communicate with satanic organizations in South Africa. So
this is like Hillary using her personal account to conduct State Department business. Oh man, the revelations are amazing. Well, now wait a minute, Botha, is he perchance a Jew?
Pastor, if you look at him, you will most probably come to a very rapid conclusion that he is virtually a permanent drunken Jew.
Because the reason why I mention this is because John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of Abraham Lincoln, his family name was Botha. And both his father and grandfather were buried in cemeteries that have Hebrew inscriptions. You get my drift.
Wow.
You get my drift.
I get your drift, Pastor.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, it's quite possible that you must remember that the VOC, like we've spoken about many times, the VOC that set up the refreshments and the replenishment station of the Cape was a Edomite, Gazarian, or Ashkenazian organization
Jewish.
Under the lordship of the
Spit
Lord
it out.
17.
Spit it out. Jewish.
And
right?
all the employees of that organization, and of course their agents and their representatives that came to South Africa, or that came to the Cape of Good Hope, were Edomites as well. And these Edomites have, many of them have stayed. Jan van Riebeeck himself moved on to the Republic of Batavia, but so many of the VOC employees remained in the Cape.
Okay.
And those have been identified on numerous occasions to be Edomites who came to South Africa. And there's also books written about it. I haven't read the books as yet, but there's books that I've bumped across and that I have managed to download from the internet, and I have actually labeled a number that I still need to go out and see if I can source them from somewhere to buy. But the one of these books, for example, is the early it is about the early landing of Jews in the Cape.
Okay.
Now that means that there were in particular people that were called Jews that came to the Cape. Now you must remember that the Boers that came to the Cape were for all practical purposes, if you go and look at the history, so many of the writers that wrote about them knew that they were Israelites, and that they referred to these people as Freeburgers, but it were these Israelites. And even Sir Arthur Conan Doyle remarked about the Boers in his writings on the Anglo-Boer War. He said that these Boers had a fatalistic or a dire fatalistic Old Testament religion or a belief system, but it is an Old Testament belief system or Old Testament religion. And that could only have been if the Boers were Israelites. And there are quite a number of books that actually relate to this, that the Boers knew that they were Israelites because it was conveyed and told from generation to generation. So they knew that they were Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
But because the Boers were never, they did not believe in this Edomite world structure of church and state. Now you must remember the church and state actually emanates from this thing called church.
Right.
Because, are you there, Pastor?
Well, yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, as you mentioned many times, they're the daughters of Rome.
And the daughters of Rome. In fact, it's Babylon that is manifested through Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also, and I bumped into something very interesting the other day, but there are so many loose ends that I'm currently busy trying to pick up, but time is evading me. This thing about church and state, where does state come from? State comes from church.
Mm-hmm.
Because first of all, the Edomites, having a unbiblical mechanism to control their people, they then set up church first,
mm-hmm.
because church was so easy to set up,
right?
And in the place of the kindred of the house of Jacob. Mm-hmm. So church was established to actually kick out everything that the Bible says about the chosen descendants of the right. house of Jacob.
Covenant people. Nation. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the chosen people. So they set up church. Once they had established church, of course, they ran into problems because the laws of the Almighty was no longer to be followed. And that is also the reason why we find today that churches only read the laws of the Ten Commandments. And then they say, that is what you must uphold. But when it comes to the practical, when you walk out of the church, you obey the laws of the state. Now, state and church is in a conspiracy against the chosen nation of Israel. That is exactly the point that I wanted to make about that. But there is such a lot to be said about it.
Right.
I only stepped into the reading up about this for about 5 or 7 minutes.
All right. So yeah, we have about 7 minutes left. So I'm not sure if I missed it or not, but where did you get this information that George Soros is involved with AfriForum? Can you explain that, clarify that, please?
Pastor, it's quite complex because there are so many different aspects to it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to actually post it onto our Skype conversation. And if you want to perhaps browse through it, because there's such a lot to it and quite a number of links also. Links,
well, could you do a brief write-up for us and then, you know, send me that with the links, and then I will post it up on Eurofolk Radio along with this show. Okay?
Yes, I could do that, Pastor. But this whole writing is actually very explanatory in itself, because it explains it and it then provides the link, and I will make it available for you.
All right.
There is some Afrikaans as well.
Okay.
And,
give me one second here, because of people who aren't familiar with George Soros, because a lot of people will be listening to the playbacks of these shows, and because George Soros is behind Black Lives Matter and Antifa. His open society
absolutely.
Forums have been known to finance communist fronts and anti-white fronts, pro-Jewish fronts, etc., etc. So, and the way we found out about his financing of Black Lives Matter and Antifa was because he pays these people to demonstrate, just as the Pharisees of Judea paid people to demonstrate against Jesus Christ. They're still up to their old tricks, okay? So
it's the same tricks, it's just in a different jacket.
Right, exactly. So because George Soros is also a cheap Jew, besides being an evil Jew, he failed to pay these demonstrators, and they had a demonstration which was filmed. Pay us, George. Pay us, George. Because he hadn't paid them after so many months, right? This is how we found out about it. Back to you.
Well, Pastor, that is the pattern that they also, if I can just take a few steps back.
Okay.
It was the same pattern that was also entertained by the Cape Dutch Afrikaners in the last few years of their governing of South Africa. Now, we have spoken about the prophet, the Boer prophet, Sina van Rensburg. Sina van Rensburg, actually, in his prophecies, he mentions about what is called the thorn bush government, the Doringbos regering.
Right.
Now, the Doringbos regering is definitely an organization, or the organization that held the previous white Afrikaner government in place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember that Nelson Mandela and all the top structure executives of the communist parties and the ANC, etc., those that were either banned and were outside of South Africa's borders or in jail, those that were in jail had to become Freemasons for their release.
Hmm.
Now, F.W. de Klerk actually announced, and he said that Nelson Mandela had sworn off violence as a means of protest.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that Nelson Mandela was responsible for something like 183 deeds of terrorism.
Right.
And everybody wondered, why wasn't he actually executed?
Right.
Because in South Africa at the time, people were executed for high treason.
Yes.
But Nelson Mandela was not executed. In fact, mm-hmm. Him and the cadres of the ANC and some other of the top organizations were never executed. What they were, they were held in jail, but they were entertained in various ways and forms, and they became Freemasons. And these Freemasons were actually protected, because I discovered something else, and this is a very important thing. The question that needs to be asked is, why did Jan Smuts, now Jan Smuts was a field marshal of the British Army. Now, he was also a South African prime minister on a number of occasions, but a few months before the outbreak of the Second World War, Nelson Mandela was only a young man of 20 years old. Nelson Mandela was attending a college. I'm not sure where it is. I didn't read or get to to the point where which college he was. But Jan Smuts, in his position as leader of one of the biggest political parties of South Africa, he had been prime minister. I can't recall whether he was prime minister at the time, but he visited Nelson Mandela, the 20-year-old youngster, at the college where Nelson Mandela was studying. The mm-hmm. question is, did Nelson Mandela already, prior to the Second World War, was he already earmarked by the Freemasons fulfill a role further on?
No doubt. Well, he went to the Soviet Union for his communist education. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But why would the Afrikaner, the Cape Dutch Afrikaner Jan Smuts, why would he go out of his way to go and actually visit Nelson Mandela at the college where he is? I mean, being the man that Jan Smuts was, one would have thought that he would have had Nelson Mandela to come and visit him, whatever discussions were made, because the discussions were discussed in private. But Nelson Mandela, I believe, was already earmarked from the day of his birth playing a role.
Yeah, just like Barack Obama. Just like Barack
Absolutely.
Obama.
I wanted to draw that parallel.
Well, I had to jump in because we don't have enough time to do any more of this. Let's go on with this next Sunday, okay?
All right? Excellent, Pastor.
Because we're just about out of time. So here we go, folks. Thank you for listening. This has been Voice of Christian Israel for Sunday, July 15th, 2018. Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you, Pastor. Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh.